Predictably Irrational: The Hidden Forces That Shape Our Decisions. Author, Dan Ehrlich. Let us talk about human irrationality, about our distance from perfection. I believe that recognizing where we depart from the ideal is an important part of the quest to truly understanding ourselves, and one that promises many practical benefits. Understanding irrationality is important for our everyday actions and decisions, and for understanding how we design our environment and the choices it presents to us. It's not just the behaviour that I've tried to understand, but also decision-making processes behind such behaviour. Why everything is relative, even when it shouldn't be. Humans rarely choose things in absolute terms. They don't have an internal value meter which tells them how much things are worth. Rather, they focus on the relative advantage of one thing over another and estimate value accordingly. In the case of Economist, the decisions between the internet-only and print-only options would take a bit of thinking. Predictability, irrational simply, shows the way the mind is wired. We are always looking at things around us in relation to others. Can we do anything about this problem of relativity? Though relativity helps us make decisions in life, it can still make us downright miserable because jealousy and envy spring from comparing our lot in life with that of others. However, the good news is that we can sometimes control the circles around us, moving towards circles that boost our relative happiness. If we're at a class reunion and there's a big circle in the middle of the room boasting about his big salary, we can consciously take several steps away and talk with someone else. If we are thinking of buying a new house, we can be selective about the open houses we go to, skipping the houses that are above our means. Herding. It's important to understand the process of which our first decisions translate into long-term habits. Herding happens when we assume that something is good or bad on the basis of other people's previous behaviour and our actions will follow suit. But there's another kind of herding, one that we call self-herding. This happens when we believe something is good or bad on the basis of our own previous behaviour. The cost of zero cost. Why we often pay too much when we pay nothing. It's no secret that getting something for free feels good. Zero is not just another price, it turns out. Zero is an emotional hot button, a source of irrational excitement. What is it about zero cost that we find so irresistible? Why does free make us so happy? After all, free can lead us into trouble. Things that we would never consider purchasing become incredibly appealing as soon as they are free. The cost of social norms. Why are we happy to do things, but not when we are paid to do them? The world of social norms includes the friendly requests that people make of one another. Social norms are wrapped up in our social nature and our need for community. They are usually warm and fuzzy. Instant paybacks are not required. You may help move your neighbour's couch, but this doesn't mean he has to come right over and move yours. It's like opening a door for someone. It provides pleasure for you both, and reciprocity is not immediately required. The second world, the one governed by market norms, is very different. There is nothing warm and fuzzy about it. The exchanges are sharp-edged: wages, prices, rents, interests, costs, and benefits. Such market relationships are not necessarily evil or mean, in fact. They also include self-reliance, inventiveness, and individualism, but they do imply comparable benefits and prompt payments. When you're in the domain of market norms, you get what you pay for. That's the way it is. The problem of procrastination and self-control. Why we can't make ourselves do what we want to do. Procrastination is also rooted in the problem of man's irrationality. When we promise to save our money, we are in a cool state. But the lava flow of hot emotions comes rushing in just when we promise to save, we see a new car that we must have. Yet giving up on our long-term goals for immediate gratification is procrastination. Take the example of savings. I begin to imagine a credit card of a different kind, a self-control credit card that would let people restrict their own spending behaviour. The users could decide in advance how much money they wanted to spend in each category, in every store and in every time frame. The high price of ownership. Why we overvalue what we have. Ownership pervades our lives and in a strange way shapes many of the things that we do. Much of our life story can be told by describing the ebb and the flow of our particular possessions, what we get and what we give up. Yet since so much of our lives is dedicated to ownership, wouldn't it be nice to make the best decisions about this? Unfortunately, this is rarely the case because of the three irrational quirks in our human nature. We fall in love with what we already have. We focus on what we may lose rather than what we may gain. We assume other people see the transaction from the same perspective as we do. The context of our character. Why we are dishonest and what we can do about it. In general, the superego is pleased when we comply with society's ethics and unhappy when we don't. This is why we stop our car at 4 a.m. when we see a red light. Even if we know that no one is around, these acts simulate the reward centres of our brain and make us content. Yet, if honesty makes us feel so good, why are we so frequently dishonest? The problem is that our internal honesty monitor is active only when we contemplate big transgressions, like grabbing an entire box of pens from the conference hall. We don't even consider how these actions would reflect on our honesty, and so our superego stays asleep. Without the superego's help, monitoring and managing of our honesty, the only defense we have against this kind of transgression is a rational cost-benefit analysis. Scientists prove that the probability of being caught does not seem to have much influence on dishonesty. Because we are adept at rationalizing our petty dishonesty, it's often hard to get a clear picture of how non-monetary objects influence our cheating. What is behavioral economics, and where are the free lunches? One of the main differences between standard and behavioral economics involves the concept of free lunches. According to the assumptions of standard economics, all human decisions are rational and informed, motivated by an accurate concept of the worth of all goods and service and the amount of happiness all decisions are likely to produce. Under this set of assumptions, everyone in the marketplace is trying to maximize profit and striving to optimize his experiences. As a consequence, economic theory asserts that there are no free lunches. If there were any, someone would have already have found them and extracted their value. Behavioural economists, on the other hand, believe that people are susceptible to irrelevant influences, irrelevant emotions, short-sightedness, and other forms of irrationality. Being swayed by what other people choose might lead you to choose worse alternatives. Yet, even if we make the wrong decision from time to time, the standard economics perspective suggests that we will quickly learn from our mistakes, either on our own or with the help of the market forces. On the basis of these assumptions, economists draw conclusions about everything from shopping trends to law to public policy. But we're all less rational in our decision-making than standard economic theory assumes. Our rational behaviours are neither random nor senseless. They are systematic and predictable. We all make the same type of mistakes over and over because of the basic writing of our brains.